Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio not one but two people to talk about what's happening inside the city. Frank Kelly has been here before. He's the superintendent. I believe that's your title.
Correct, Mike.
Superintendent of the airport in Palmer, Alaska. And you've brought a guest today. How about introducing her?
I have. This is Jenny Hunter. She's with the FAA Flight Service Station at the Palmer Municipal Airport.
Okay. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you.
Now, how long have you been with the FAA?
Well, the full history is I came onto the federal government in April of 1980. I joined the FAA in May of 1984. Started working at Palmer Flight Service in December of 1984. I'm only 26, though. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay. I can understand. I know, because, you work with an older guy, right?
They're all older guys.
Okay. So one of the things that probably it needs to be established first, people understand airports. And I think many listeners have driven by enough airports to say, okay, there's a tower, and we understand in many ways, even if you're not a pilot, that towers somehow interact with the flight activity at airports, particularly in a place like Anchorage at Ted Stevens International Airport. But now we have something that you've used a different term for, a flight service station.
Flight service station. Air traffic control comes in three basic types. There's the tower, which is what most people are familiar with, that you'll see at Ted Stevens or you'll see at Merrill Field. And these are controllers who either visually or with radar have actual contact with aircraft and provide separation.
Okay.
And they work strictly within the terminal or airport area. They are not doing long distance work. Then we have the Air Route Traffic Control Center, and they are the people who provide separation over long distance. So when you take off from Anchorage International, you talk to the Anchorage Tower, and once you get airborne and established on your route, you then are transferred to the Traffic Control Center, who will guide you on your way to Seattle. And when you get close to Seattle, you will be transferred back to Seattle Tower. In Alaska, Alaska's the last place that has federal flight service. There is a very different contract flight service that handles the rest of the United States. In Alaska, we still have federal flight service. There's 17 facilities. We do not, other than very, very rare circumstances, provide what's called positive control. We do not separate aircraft. Our primary purpose is to provide pilot weather briefings, so weather and condition information along a flight, flight planning services for primarily VFR, but which is visual flight rules, and occasionally also instrument flight rules, pilots. The reality of the matter is, in Alaska, flight service does a lot of airport advisory work, which if you were to listen to it and not understand the rules, sounds an awful lot like what a tower does. We provide information on what the winds are doing, what the traffic in the airport environment is, what runway is in use. All of this sounds very similar to what a tower does. The difference being, the tower will have contact with you and be providing you with separation in flight service. Some of our buildings don't even face the runway. Oh. I don't have a full view of all of my runways. But so based on pilot position reporting and what I can see out the window, I am advising you of what's out there. But the pilots are responsible for their own separation.
So do you spend 24/7? How many hours of the day and week is the flight service station?
Here at Palmer, we're open 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. That varies at the different facilities. We have three facilities in the state that are only open during the summer. We have three facilities in the state that are open 24/7 year-round. All of the facilities that aren't open 24 hours, when we close, our frequencies go to one of those 24-hour facilities. So you always have radio contact with a flight service. from an airport that has a flight service on it. It just may not be your local people.
So if I happen to be a pilot in the plane, out of the hours that you were here and operational, then I would be talking, I could talk to someone, but it would be someone perhaps well out of this area.
Correct. And in the case of Palmer, you would be speaking with someone at the Kenai Flight Service. Now, they will not provide you with airport advisory service.
Right.
You have to be at the field to provide airport advisory service. So they would be able to provide you with weather briefings, flight plans. If there were, for example, when it snows and we have snow on the runway, they could provide you with the most recent information we had about snow depths on the runway, but they would not provide you with traffic.
Okay.
So you would just speak back and forth on the frequency with other pilots to determine what traffic was happening.
Sure. Well, for anyone who's a pilot, I think much of what you described is understood. I think the value of what we're doing here is to maybe clarify the range from a grass strip that someone has in their backyard, their big backyard, to a very large international airport in Anchorage, Miss Blair, whatever, which has all kinds of service and so on. And then in between, we have Palmer's Airport, which anyone driving by would say is pretty busy. It looks like, I mean, there are light aircraft. There's not there are planes. I happen to live very close to the airport. I'm aware of when it's busy and when it's not. And there are larger aircraft, but generally not a lot of large aircraft coming in all the time. So how many people are involved in the flight service station here at Palmer?
We have two full-time staff.
Ah.
7 days a week. Two jobs, both of us are there one day of the week. So.
Got it. Okay. Well, some time ago, you were not working for the FAA.
Back when dinosaurs roamed the earth,
right.
That is correct.
But what attracted you to, and a little bit of the history of saying, okay, how did you get into doing this?
Well, it's not a very attractive story, I'm afraid. I was working for the Department of Defense and the Federal Women's Program Manager and the Federal Women's Program exists to try to get women out of basically entry clerical positions into
right.
other, at the time, less female. They're trying to get women into a broader range of positions in the federal government. The Federal Women's Program Manager at the facility that I was working at for Department of Defense came wandering into my office one day with a piece of paper and said, "They're giving the air traffic control test. You should take it." And I did, and passed with a high enough score that they offered me a job, and here I am.
So have you worked primarily at a flight service station, or have you spent time as an air traffic controller in other installations?
I accepted the job with the FAA. I went to the training academy in Oklahoma City. That's changed a little bit since I went, but at the time I was there, it was roughly a four-month program.
Right.
I came up to Alaska and spent a couple of months in the training pool at what used to be the Anchorage Flight Service.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been at Palmer ever since. So this is it. This is my career.
That's called experience, though. I mean, you can tell when things change just a little bit. That's a good thing.
Yeah. It's like a lot of things. There's pluses and minuses. Sometimes I have a little trouble moving on with the new way of doing things.
Well, maybe that's part of the series of questions here. Since you have the history and you have watched what's happening, how would you describe changes that have occurred over 30-year span in terms of anything from the equipment being used or the guidelines for operations, any of that? What sticks out in your mind as changes?
Well, our primary briefing tool that we use now is fully computerized. Click on a map, there it is in color,
right.
All updated. When I started working there, we got our print forecasts. They just came out automatically on a printer, and you had to keep track of them and pull them and maintain them. and our photographic briefing tools, our satellite, well, we didn't get satellite pictures, but our forecast maps and things like that came out on, I couldn't even tell you the real name of it now. We called it a wet fax, but a big machine that used electrostatic energy on a chemically dampened piece of paper.
Right.
And you would tear them off and let them dry and then color them with magic markers.
Well, you've lost that creativity.
That's, I don't have to color every day at work anymore. So the equipment that we use for weather briefing has just improved, I can't even, orders of magnitude.
Right.
It updates faster. We have so many more things available to us than we used to because we're using bits and bytes instead of paper and crayons. But and that's a technological improvement. The material we work with is still very much the same. We've just really improved the delivery to the specialist, and we've gone through half a dozen different systems between then and now. I was in the last class in the FAA Academy that trained on an actual teletype.
Oh.
So it has changed just a tiny bit.
Well, let me tell you that I spent a little time in the Air Force, and I was one of the last people to teach slide rule.
I actually know what a slide rule is.
Right. I had a giant one that I used to teach with. And yeah. Okay, so I know what you're saying.
The technology's changed dramatically, and primarily for the better. Keeping track of flight plans now, because they're in the computer alerts you if someone starts coming up on an overdue time, as opposed to having a whole stack of little slips of paper that you then need to remember to look at every 15 minutes. Okay, is that guy, do we still have time before we have to worry about him?
Right.
So
So you have established that there have been some very positive
changes.
We've
had some really positive changes. As time goes by and there are accidents or issues or perceived weaknesses, we get mandated to add chunks of mandatory language to our contacts with the pilots. I find that some of that is helpful and some of it is just, you really have to tailor how you present that information, because after someone's heard the same spiel over and over and over again, they quit listening to you. And so you really have to tailor how you get that mandatory language out so as to retain the attention of the person that you're talking to. Or at least give it at the end when they click off mentally, they've heard what you want them to.
Right.
But that's the world we live in. People worry about liability and they worry about risk management.
Oh, sure. Well, I know I've flown with a pilot who is very competent, and I've observed his attention, having been an Air Force pilot, a commercial pilot, and he is very attentive to communication, to ensuring that people know what he's doing, and that he contacts people, he gets information, he uses it. This is my observation, that there are levels of, if you will, professionalism in terms of piloting. And I'm not going to, with a broad brush, say that the occasional pilot is less competent in any way, but there's a difference. And I'm guessing you may, given the years you've spent, in some respects, I know that dispatch services, for example, for emergencies, people have to be able to communicate with someone in a stress situation.
Yes.
Most of the time, I'm guessing that your communication is not of that nature. It's not that stress, but it could be.
It's if you get someone who is experiencing a mechanical issue or has managed to lose themselves.
Right.
Yeah, it can ratchet up pretty rapidly.
Okay.
And I have to mentally remind myself that me squeaking at them is not going to help. So I have to keep my little Minnie Mouse voice under control at that point.
Right, right.
But, and thankfully, I've had very, very few of those in my career. We try to train our pilots that if they're going to do something silly, go do it somewhere else.
But, okay, you've been successful, I would say. Yes.
I'm not going to say it's routine, because one of the reasons that I'm still working every day is because every day is a little bit different. But you certainly have varying levels of experience with people. We have a high student population, student pilot population.
Got it.
At Palmer.
Right.
And we have people who are just, have thousands and thousands of hours of experience. And when they pick up the mic, they think they've got a snake in their hand. It's the worst thing they have to do in the entire piloting process is talk on the radio. And so you work with those people and you try to make them more comfortable and you try to guide them. And
where we go.
99% of the time, it all works out just fine. So
we've talked a little bit.
It's a good group.
We've Mike Malevsky here, and I've been talking with two people. Frank Kelly hasn't had a chance to say much, but he will. and we've been talking about the flight service station here at the Palmer Airport. We talked a little bit, looked at the history and development. What do you see coming into the future as far as flight service stations? I know there have been a few projected developments in terms of safety features to be added to aircraft that would, I presume, impact the way a flight service station would interact.
There's two things currently. A couple of years ago, the FAA mandated that all new ELTs that were installed be a different type of ELT, broadcast on a different frequency.
And tell us what an ELT is.
Emergency locator beacon.
Okay.
If people are used to boats and things like that, it would be an EPIRB.
Right.
But it is a little unit that, depending on how it is set off, sends a help me transmission to a satellite, and then the Coast Guard and the Rescue Coordination Center at Elmendorf receive that information and proceed to go look for people. We used to use a frequency 121.5, and the frequency has now been moved up to 406. And part of what that does is give us a little better accuracy, but the newer units can be tied into a GPS and send actual GPS coordinates. They can also have the ownership information encoded in that transmission, which makes it much easier to try to figure out who you're looking for. That unit is expensive for an aircraft. So what a lot of people have done is it is still legal to fly with your old 121.5 ELT. There's not a satellite monitoring that frequency anymore.
Uh-huh.
You're dependent on other pilots to monitor that. But it is legal. So a lot of pilots, because of the expense of the new 406 ELT, they're using these little personal locator beacons. There's half a dozen different models on the market. And the flight service has a system now where if you want to use one of those little locator beacons, we can integrate your personal locator beacon into our flight planning system so that if you push that button, it sends a message to us. And we can then coordinate with the Rescue Coordination Center, who's also receiving that beacon. And so it's an enhanced search and rescue system.
Okay.
The other new thing that's coming in is ADS-B, which is Automatic Dependent Broadcast Surveillance, I think. I'm not very good at translating some of this stuff. But this is a piece of equipment that basically gives the airplane's position. And right now, the requirement is for ADS-B out. So the plane has to send the information out. Our radar facilities pick that up. Aircraft with the second half of that system, which is ADS-B in, also receive that information.
Okay.
So if you have in and out in your airplane, you have a little display, and everybody else that has out shows up on that display. So this is all in the airplane.
Whoa.
I don't see, other than us being able to access that information if someone goes overdue or is late, I don't see that as having a huge impact on us in the job. But those are the two big technological changes for pilots that are kind of out there right now.
Okay.
For us at Flight Service, we're relatively safe up here in terms of the federal government is not currently targeting us for shutdown. I believe we're understood to provide a fairly valuable service in that Alaska doesn't have highways. We have airplanes.
Sure. And this is a question actually both for Frank and Jenny. The Palmer Airport, is it showing increased or a projected increase in traffic into the future, or are we at a plateau of some sort?
That's a good question, Mike. Actually, we just completed a recent airport master plan study that has the current flight mix and then current number of flights or operations, as they're called, with projections into the future. And I, off the top of my head, I believe we're at about 35,000 operations a year. Does that sound about right? And projected to increase in the future. And of course, a lot of those projections are based on time, economy, the current, you know, mix of aircraft and projected mix of aircraft. But yes, we have slowly and steadily been increasing just because of population and, you know, airplanes coming out from Anchorage as that, you know, fills up, et cetera. So.
Right. Jenny, during the year, there must be ebbs and flows of activity.
Oh, absolutely. It's very seasonal. It is just a lot of work to fly an airplane in the winter. If you don't have it in a hangar where it is clean and dry and warm, you have to clean it, dry it, warm it.
All right.
And then you get 3 whole hours of daylight to go fly around.
Right.
A lot of recreational pilots pretty much park their planes in the fall and don't fly again until spring. The weather, the amount of daylight, there's many, many things that involve into it. But the bottom line is it's just really hard to fly in the winter. So if you're not really dedicated to certain kinds of winter sports or things like that, most people just aren't going to.
So we're entering the busy season.
We are absolutely entering the busy season.
So a last set of questions, if there were listeners out there and they were thinking about air traffic control, whether it's a flight service center here or some other location, there are still new people coming in and being trained.
Absolutely.
And in fact, from time to time, I hear little bits and pieces about in any career, there can be large groups of people that enter and leave at the same time. What's the situation with air traffic controllers?
Air traffic control in general is almost always hiring. We're certainly in tower and center because they have an age limit. Flight service is also affected by that age limit to a certain extent.
Okay.
But for a tower or center job, you have to be hired prior to your 31st birthday.
Okay.
And you have a mandatory retirement for operational control. Now, if you move into a staff or a support or a supervisory job, then this goes away. But if you stay operational, like, for example, I have, there's mandatory retirement at the last day of the month in which you turn 56.
Uh-huh.
There were a few of us hired during a little gap that rule had managed to get off the books.
Oh.
I happen to be one of those people.
Oh.
So I'm just going to work until nobody can stand me anymore. I can speak to flight service specifically. 50% of the working flight service specialists in Alaska right now, roughly 50%, could retire tomorrow.
Oh.
We're either still working because we enjoy what we do or we're too dang broke to quit.
Okay.
If you wanted to get a flight or an air traffic control job, you'd go on to usajobs.gov.
Okay.
And you would search for air traffic control. And any open positions would be presented to you. I know Flight Service is going to have a job recruitment here in the next month or two going to show up. And those would be Alaska positions, since we're the only Federal Flight Service left. But the other jobs could be anywhere else in the country, Tower and Center.
Okay. So you have, Frank, some kind of relationship with Flight Service Station. They're there. They have to be there, or they're a tenant, or you like them, or what?
Pretty much all of the above.
Okay.
The federal government, FAA, says that we must provide space to house the facility if they choose to have one there. We provide that space, and we appreciate the FAA's flight service station there because of the valuable service that it provides our community. The city of Palmer's interaction with the flight service station is symbiotic in that once it leaves the ground, that's where the flight service station takes control. If it's on the ground, part of the ground works, then the city of Palmer, because we own the airport, tries to maintain order and safety on the ground, where Jenny and the flight service station tries to do that in the air.
Okay, and you both do a very good job. It is my observation. Once again, I remind that I live close enough that I can see you from my front and back porch. Well, it's my great pleasure to have been here talking with Frank and Jenny as they describe something which has provided much information to me about flight service stations and how they fit into the big picture. And any last comments before we finish?
Well, I just would like to remind our listening audience that the city of Palmer is going to be engaged in a large multi-million dollar rehabilitation project out at the airport this summer that hopefully will start sometime late June, early July. And I think before Christmas, we should pretty much have a much needed rehabilitated airport with the major airside facilities looking fresh and new and refurbished and things of that nature. So it will be a good thing to have that brand new airport smell by the end of the year.
And with that coming up, I would remind pilots, you need to check your NOTAMs. There's going to be some runway closures. But I would also like to do a little publicity. We have this weekend, we have the Hudson Memorial fly-in in Talkeetna.
Okay.
So if you want to go up and enjoy some aviation events, and they do a pretty big event up there. It goes all weekend long. And then on June 3rd here at Palmer at 8 o'clock in the morning through about noontime, we'll have our 25th annual Palmer Fly-In Breakfast. We'll have an assortment of medium and large bigwigs from the FAA there if you have questions for certain specific offices. It's all on it's an unofficial person-to-person.
Wow.
We want people to come and get things clarified, and it's a social event. We'll have a couple of presentations. We have a new medical requirement or a new medical certification system available for pilots called Basic Med. We'll have the Alaska Region Flight Service there to discuss Basic Med and help people get started on that path.
And equally, we'll have the City of Palmer and our engineering consulting firm HDL there to present the runway 1634 rehabilitation and related improvements project as part of the public outreach of that large scope of project as well.
Oh.
And I believe the mayor will be there to say a few words on behalf of the City of Palmer as well.
And I think we're going to have somebody from Flight Service there to talk about the proposed new, once again delayed, international flight planning format. Was due to go into effect 5th of June, now been pushed back to at least no earlier than September. We'll see. Maybe someday.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Your life is good. And it's summer. Thank you again, Jenny and Frank, for coming in for another part of our Inside the City programming.